She was tired. All right, open the damned package and pack him off. She was exhausted. But as she ripped ribbon and paper, the thrill of opening a package was there. It was just like Christmas time. When the lid came off the box, she just stared down at the thing in her lap. It was big and metallic and cylindrical. What the hell is it? She didn't have to say the words. He could read it on her face. It's a fire extinguisher. Everybody should have one, and last time I come in, I noticed you got no alarm in here, no extinguisher. I think, what if there's a fire, you know? What had happened to Melissa?
Fire extinguisher, huh? That's really nice of you. But it's very late, she said.
This guy was even weirder than she'd thought. There was a coil and a wand on the canister, and he lifted the whole thing, saying he'd show her how to use it. She began to protest, but suddenly everything before her went white. She knew in a blinding instant he had fired the extinguisher in her eyes. It was no extinguisher at all, but a laser torch, blinding her, burning out her eyes. The instantaneous realization ran through Melissa's brain. She was ablaze. She would die in the fire. It was over. Chapter 1. Second residential fire in less than a week has broken out on the near north side of Chicago, at the intersection of Grand and Clark Avenue. Dean Grant stopped shaving and stared at the radio. He tuned it higher, leaving lather on the knob, where his hand shook uncontrollably. Was it the news report that made him tremble? Another fire coming so soon after the one that killed Melissa Myers? The earlier blaze had authorities fearful. There had been typical signs of an arson to cover up a murder. Sadly, the Myers fire had apparently spread from the victim's apartment throughout the old brownstone, leveling it, taking the lives of several others as well. The radio announcer's voice was calm. Initial reports from the fire scene tell us the blaze appears to be under control at the moment. In Monday's fire in the Old Town area just blocks from today's blaze, residents lost their lives to what some are calling the work of an arsonist. When asked if arson is suspected in this morning's fire, authorities were reluctant to comment. Dean stared into the mirror, wondering if somehow he or his people in the lab downtown had unknowingly become the authorities to which the announcer referred. So often his words were taken out of context or just plain twisted. More likely, it was ordinary leakage of scuttlebutt coming out of police squad rooms. He knew for a fact that Chief Inspector Ken Kelso was trying quietly to investigate the possibility of arson on the basis of the scant forensic evidence he and his assistants had provided police. But it was scant. In no way should it have been broadcast as proof or even conjecture over the airwaves. After several annoying ads, the reporter returned merely to say, "Stay tuned and stay informed, WYGB. The station that asks why will bring you live coverage of this and other late-breaking stories." Dean looked at his watch. 5:25 a.m. He told himself he was worrying unnecessarily. Still, his hand shook so badly he cut himself shaving, something he hadn't done since he was a teen. Engine Company 3 had been the first in company. Captain Al Cheney's first radio report indicated heavy smoke and a threat of expansion. However, it appeared Number 3 had it under control. Still, Captain Cheney requested a second alarm. His caution was born of experience with hundreds of small fires that had become large ones. It was still pitch blackout, and the early morning fire had caused little or no disruption of traffic along Clark Street or Grand Avenue. Both thoroughfares were being rerouted by police, both impinged upon the half-block perimeter of what Cheney had decided must be the fall line. Some of the firefighters thought him overly cautious, especially the guys at the perimeter.